Futures Radio Show, sponsored by CME Group, the world's leading and most diverse futures and options exchange. CME Group's markets help individuals and businesses around the world effectively manage risk. For access to free educational tools and resources for the active individual trader, please visit activetrader.cmegroup.com.
Every day, traders and investors dive in to tackle the ever-changing markets to find opportunity. Futures Radio Show is your number one source for answers to the questions that all market participants want to ask. Veteran futures trader Anthony Crudelli sits down with the most influential leaders and top traders in the industry. Now, here's your host, Anthony Crudelli.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in for this episode with Michael Creedon. Remember, new shows are posted every Monday and Thursday. You can subscribe to our show on iTunes and YouTube. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a review on iTunes. Before I play today's interview for you, I want to give a shout out to the great sponsors of Futures Radio Show: CME Group, Trading Technologies, RJO Futures, and Top Step Trader. To learn more about these sponsors and the important things they are doing for futures traders, be sure to click on their logos on our website. Today, I spoke with Michael Creedon, CEO of ForRev. Michael went from a co-founder and CEO of a futures prop firm to completely focusing on blockchain and crypto. We talked about why he decided to do this, and we discussed how many other futures market participants have either added cryptos to their business models or have completely moved into crypto. We chatted about how the pricing of cryptos, such as Bitcoin, are not tied to the growth of blockchain. He explains why Christine Lagarde's latest comments are great news for blockchain and cryptos. Michael tells us where we are right now when it comes to regulation on crypto assets, how he's become very involved with ICOs, and he tells us what ICOs he's currently invested in. Finally, we discussed the growth of futures contracts on crypto assets. Without further ado, let me take you right to the interview with Michael. Michael, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to talk with you, Michael. So you went from co-founder and CEO of Tradedum, which was a prop firm primarily focused on futures, to now focus solely on cryptos with your new company, ForRev. So talk to us about why the change and how's it going with ForRev?
Great. Well, thanks for having me. You know, it's funny. You and I saw each other last year at the CME event in Naples. And I had already decided late last year to transition out of Tradedum and sort of to leave the futures industry. And I was looking to do something else. I ended up at a table with about six other traders from Chicago who were early adopters of Bitcoin and blockchain and cryptos and so forth. And it was just the most fascinating, riveting discussion I can remember. And I literally came home from that and I was like, you know, I need to take a closer look at that. And within like 6 weeks, I decided, all right, this is what I'm going to do. And what I decided to do originally was to write about cryptocurrencies and blockchain and Bitcoin, because I felt like there was a lack of strong media content. And so that's why I started ForRev. You know, I mean, if you look at it from a trader's perspective, like JP Morgan and Goldman Sachs, they don't put out research reports about these things, or at least they weren't doing that a year ago. And so I thought, hey, and the mainstream media barely covers it either. So, you know, I'm a former journalist. I used to work at Bloomberg and Time and Voice of America a long time ago. And so that's why I decided, hey, I'm going to start a crypto consultancy or media company and try to, you know, try to explain what's going on in this industry. So that's kind of how I transitioned into it.
Yeah, I mean, when I spoke to you at GFLC, I know how amped you were about this space. And, you know, Michael, we're seeing more and more people from the futures industry either add cryptos to what they're doing on a regular basis or just straight up moving into crypto.
Well, I think so. Yeah, I think there's been a massive transition from some of the big trading firms, both in Chicago and around the world, that are very, very involved in this. But you know, that may or may not be the case, but I just heard anecdotally that a lot of firms have moved in that direction. There's a ton of opportunity. There really is. And I think the opportunity set is going to grow. I mean, my view is, and this is just for media reports, that, you know, the big exchanges, CME, NASDAQ, obviously ICE, are looking at different ways to strategically get involved in the space. And I think it's a fair statement to say that the traditional exchanges will have a much bigger crypto reach in the next 2 to 5 years than they currently have. But even if they don't, I mean, look what's going on in the crypto space in general. It's just exploding. You know what I mean? Obviously, this has been a down year in price, but I think nonetheless, a lot of the trends in terms of volume are pretty positive if you take a longer term view.
Do you think that the downturn in price is something that is going to hurt the growth of blockchain, or do you think that the price has to start going up to help the growth?
I think it's the other way around, quite frankly. Maybe it's semantics, but like blockchain is here forever. It's never going to go away. And it's going to permeate every sector of economy, healthcare, education, government, military, data, Wall Street. Everywhere. It's that's happening. And I think as an ancillary spillover effect, you will probably have Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies as the liquidity for that ecosystem. But I think it's inevitable that blockchain grows and cryptos are a part of that, the price, I know it sounds crazy. The price in and of itself is not that important. What's more important is the blockchain integration to the global economy and that adoption of blockchain technology. As that takes off, who knows where this stuff goes? I think it's pretty, if you look at one thing I've learned watching this closely is the involvement of IBM, Deloitte, Accenture, Ernst & Young, PricewaterhouseCoopers. They are absolutely all over this stuff. And the reason is because their clients are need help transitioning towards that. Whether it's the banks or the exchanges or whomever, healthcare companies, they need help facilitating and transitioning towards blockchain. That's why they've hired these global consultancies. McKinsey's another one. And so I see that beneath the surface. Doesn't get talked about in the media as much, but Fortune 500 and Fortune 5,000 companies are absolutely working on blockchain solutions right now. It's unambiguous.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I look at charts, right? As a technical person, I look at correlations. And a lot of people are saying that if Bitcoin crashes and all these other cryptos crash, that's the end of blockchain. But when you look at the actual correlation between last year and this year of the price versus the growth actually in businesses, you are exactly right. It's the exact opposite. Last year was a much bigger up year for crypto. It did not nearly have as much growth actually hitting businesses versus this year. The prices have gone down, but yet there's more and more implementation of blockchain.
Right.
Yeah. So I want to talk about something. You're very active on LinkedIn, so I want to talk about a couple of things that you wrote on there. And this is one of the most recent ones you wrote. You wrote something about Christine Lagarde, and this took my attention. She's the IMF chief, for those of you that don't know. And she said, and I'm going to quote here, "I think that we are about to see massive disruptions." And that was referring to digital currencies. She says it's time to get serious, you wrote in your post. And you said in the year that you've spent looking at cryptos, you've become more convinced in the future of digital assets, not less. And that's really saying a lot, Michael, because like I said, I know you personally, and you are probably one of the most vocal in this space, and you have just such conviction with it. So I'm wondering, why is it what she is saying? Why is Christine Lagarde giving you more confidence in your viewpoint now?
Well, she's a serious person, a lot of the big institutions have been reluctant to embrace that. For example, Lloyd Blankfein said, before his retirement, a year ago, "I'm not a fan." Jamie Dimon called it a scam. So those are big global bankers, and they're like, "No, this is stupid." She's a very serious person, and she says, "Look, there's massive disruptions." I think she meant obviously in blockchain, but I think because I've talking to people this year, I've just realized this is real. Let me just give you a couple just small examples. I was in Dubai, met this woman who's an attorney. She's a former general counsel of a Fortune 20 company. And she said, "I have clients now that are central banks that are buying cryptocurrencies." And I said, "Really? I mean, is that really happening?" She's like, why don't you believe me? I'm like, I just haven't heard about it. I no one has told me that central banks are buying Bitcoin. She's like, they're buying them. So, I mean, that's a data point. You know, I talked to somebody that is building a crypto exchange, and they were going to provide custodian solutions as part of their offering. And then I talked to them 3 months later. They said, no, we're not doing that. I said, why? They said, because State Street and Bank of New York are going to provide that solution. They're coming into the, I mean, so now, see, you look around, central banks are entering it. You know, State Street and Bank of New York are rumored to be entering it. Look at the deal that ICE did with Microsoft and Starbucks. And so you look at these data points, and it's just hard for me to stand back and say, this is just a scam. This is going to go away in 6 months. I think there's way too much inertia and momentum from credible people, both in the public and private sector, that makes me believe that, you know, this blockchain revolution is just beginning.
So your CBs, central banks buying crypto assets, that's a pretty bold statement. I look forward to hopefully seeing some actual proof on that, you know, right, if we ever can get it. But so I want to talk about regulation, because this is something that you know extremely well, especially coming out of the prop space. I mean, probably very few people I know it as well as you. So correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought the point of crypto was to keep the government and the regulators out of the mix. And I would say 3 years ago when I started doing blockchain shows, that was the talk of it. Now, every single day I wake up and I'm reading a post on, you know, the CFTC, SEC, or more regulators getting involved, and this is supposed to be bullish for the price of these cryptos. So, Michael, where are we with the regulation on the crypto side of things?
Wow, it's a big question. I mean, the first thing that I would say, which is really complex, is, you know, this is a global space, and that's where it's tricky. I mean, obviously the SEC's job is to enforce rules here and also to make sure Americans don't get ripped off elsewhere. And they will chase you down all over the world if you've ripped off an American. But it's just this, I mean, meanwhile, so the SEC has their position. Jay Clayton said, every ICO I've looked at is a security token. It's not a utility token. Okay. And, you know, remember that almost every coin that out there is they think they're a utility token. So there's a day of reckoning there with utility tokens in the United States. Meanwhile, Singapore Central Bank, I think it was a deputy central bank official in Singapore, says every single coin in the world is utility token. So, I mean, their positions could not be more different. So you have this whole hopscotching effect going around the world where people are trying to find jurisdictional safe spots, and it's extremely complex. It's moving very quickly. I think it's safe to say that some countries are much, much more proactive than this one. We are using 1932 and 1933 securities rules and laws to, you know, define what's happening. So, you know, it's a little bit of a jumbled mess. You know, that's the reality of it. But and it's, you know, I just want to make a note. I probably know 20 American, you know, companies that are doing ICOs, and 18 of them are not doing them here because they're like, it's too complicated. We're afraid of the SEC. So we're going to go to Malta. We're going to go to Estonia. So it's, I mean, in some regards, it's kind of sad. I think the United States is at the moment is kind of pushing business outside this country, but you know, it's fluid. It will evolve. I think it's safe to say there's a ton happening globally with regulation, and it's hard to pinpoint, you know, where we're at. I mean, that's the central question. Do we want to make new laws and start over, or do we want to use legal precedent from 1932? And I think the U.S. is taking, you know, let's just use precedent like we always do. Other parts of the world are saying, no, let's start with a clean slate and just write new, you know. So that's kind of what I see. I don't know if that answers the question, but.
Yeah, no, it does. I mean, it's an evolving space. So it is what it is. And you just mentioned ICOs. You've become very involved in the ICO space. Right. What are you seeing out there right now in that space?
Well, right now it's like trying to do an IPO, you know, 3 weeks after Lehman Brothers. I mean, nobody can raise any money. You know, it's just the worst possible environment. Yeah, I mean, we've had a 80%, 90% correction in, you know, Ethereum, and Bitcoin's down a ton. So the landscape has shifted very, very quickly, and it's pretty lousy, quite frankly. However, I mean, look, markets, this is what happens. This is what happened in equity markets 10 years ago. And I mean, I don't think there was a single IPO for like 4 years after Lehman Brothers. Or, I mean, if there were, it was a very small number. So that's a challenge. But I think the bigger story is crowdfunding as a form of raising capital is probably, it's safe to say that's here forever. Ironically, what's happening at the moment, because it's so hard to raise money, everybody's going back to the venture capitalists that they wanted to ignore 2 years ago because they're the only ones still making investments. So it's funny how it just evolves. And now the new trend in ICOs is to give up equity, which again, it feels a little bit more like where things were at maybe 3 years ago with venture capital. But the you know, the difference now is that people are offering these coins. And I think that, you know, what people seem to like about the coins is they offer liquidity. That's the big, you know, one of the big trade-offs here is, you know, maybe you give up some governance rights, but unless you own a majority stake in a company, what are your governance rights worth? You know, and people are saying, listen, you could take my vote in the company that isn't going to affect anything. Just give me the coins and I have that liquidity. And I think the liquidity aspect of ICOs is what I think investors really, really like. Now, granted, this year has been last few months has been terrible. Most ICOs are collapsing, but you know, I think it's fair to say that that trend may at some point, you know, normalize to some extent.
Well, for me as a trader, yeah, I always look for times when people don't want to buy anything. And that's typically right. When you want to buy. I mean, it's even as someone, I'm not the best real estate person, but I am always looking for downspells in markets to eventually buy real estate. For me, maybe this is something that is happening in the ICO space. I think it's a lot trickier than the stock market space or the real estate space, but it could be something interesting to keep an eye on. What cryptos are you invested in?
A few, but I mean, there's two that I've really got an eye on. One is called Ternio. Ternio is out of Atlanta. They are in the advertising space. I knew nothing about this, but there's a tremendous amount of fraud in the ad space with digital fraud, basically, you know, and so they have a technology solution. They're working with IBM as a counterparty and other, and they're trying to disrupt the ad space. So that's interesting. I own the coin, but I'm not involved with the project as an advisor. There's another one called Pecunio, which is I'm an advisor and I do own the coin. They're out of basically Dubai. What's interesting about them, you know, they've constructed a fund of funds of venture capital. So they have about 35 coins in their portfolio. And so they're allocating out their own coin, the Pecunio coin, and they're taking in other people's coins or equity, whatever the case may be. And so, I think it becomes really interesting because they're going to have 35 coins hitting the market in the next year or two. And I just, you know, as a trader, I know how this is. If Ethereum rallies, it's going to be very, very, it'll bode well for these ICOs. I mean, if Ethereum crashes, it won't. So you know, you have this optionality in and around Ethereum. But what's interesting about it, you know, from the portfolio effect is you've got 35 ICOs. So, you know, you're kind of covered. I mean, if Ethereum runs up next June, you're probably going to have four companies that are running their ICOs to the market. So that's what I kind of like about it. And, you know, again, as you dig deeper, I think there's some phenomenal companies in the portfolio. I'll just give you an example of one. I mean, there's a company called PharmaTrust, and PharmaTrust is blockchain technology to prevent fraud in the sale of pharmaceutical drugs. And I knew nothing about this, but a lot of pharmaceutical drugs that end up in Walmart, or excuse me, Walgreens are fake. You know what I mean? So there's this whole blockchain solution to track that, monitor it, make sure that the drugs that you're putting in your body are safe and they're not scams. And so, you know, that's one of the underlying companies in Pecunio, but they've got, you know, this portfolio effect of 30 companies. I personally, what I'm seeing in the market is investors are afraid to make one-off investments because they're too volatile. And that's another reason why I think the trend for now is that the people who want to invest in the space are looking more at funds from what I can see, as opposed to one-off investments. So that's another, you know, that's why I think the funds are worth keeping an eye on. I mean, just to name a couple, you know, you've got Pantera's a huge fund, and there's others like that that are also constructing these types of investments. So somebody said, hey, I want to put 10 grand into the space. You know, you might be able to find an investment that would put you into, you know, 30 or 50 companies. So
yeah,
that's kind of what I'm looking at. Yeah.
Hey everyone, I hope you're enjoying the show so far, but I want to pause and thank one of our sponsors, Trading Technologies. I started using TT in the year 2000, and I love it. It is by far the best trading platform I have ever used, and I've tried a lot of them. With TT, you can trade the global markets from virtually anywhere in the world. They are the world's fastest commercially available futures trading platform. I highly suggest you go try out TT, especially because you can try it for free. Just go to tryttnow.com and set up your account. So you mentioned, and I agree with you, that people are afraid to invest in these. And yep. So you're investing in them. So the question I have for you is simple. How are you doing the homework to decide which ones to go into? I mean, because you obviously, you talked about Pecurio, if I'm saying it right, because you're involved in that one. So you're there, yep. you know, you're seeing firsthand what's happening. Now, Ternio, the one you mentioned out of Atlanta, how do you know that this is one that you could put your money in?
You know, it's such a good question. I mean, it's actually pronounced pecunio. Pecun means money in Latin, and IO is initial offer, pecunio. But I mean, I'm old school like you. I mean, I've flown around the world and met these people and sat down with them. I mean, to me, meeting them and talking with them for 30 minutes or an hour and getting to know them is more instructive than me just reading their white paper or just looking at their pitch deck. You know, and I just met with, you know, I've met a lot of people in business over the years. And for me, there's some element of where I can establish a trust with somebody where I say, you know what, I believe in this person. I understand, you know, I don't know what it is. I of course they have a compelling narrative, but there's something about it where I decide, you know what, this is right for me. Like for example, I wouldn't go online and just read a white paper and like sign up online. Hey, I'm going to buy some coins. Like that wouldn't be enough for me. I'd have to meet the person in person, meet them face to face and get to know them. And I think as I've vetted a lot of projects, I've just simply spent more time with these people and gotten to know them. And I've just been persuaded by what they've had to say, you know? So, but you know, look, there's so many projects and what's unfortunate to some extent, or maybe, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword. Everything's tied to Ethereum, which is, you know, right now it's unfortunate, but again, if Ethereum recovers, you know, there could be enormous upside. That's what we saw last year, of course. You know, as Bitcoin ran to 20,000, it was a circus. I mean, everything just exploded. And I'm not expecting something like that again. However, even a modest recovery in Bitcoin and Ethereum would likely have a multiplier effect on these altcoins. I think it would. Like if Ethereum goes to 400, that's almost a 60% increase. I think these other coins would go up more than 60%, you know, theoretically at least.
Yeah.
But, you know, remains to be seen.
Yeah. So hearing you and how you go through your process of getting involved in one of these ICOs is a pretty tall order for mass retail people to actually decide how to get involved in one of these ICOs. I've never been involved in an ICO. I've only traded the majors, Bitcoin, Ethereum, and, you know, those I trade. You know, I don't consider myself an investor in them. I trade them. So for me, I'm in and out, and you know, it's a lot easier for me because I've been taking risk my whole life trading futures. So this is just another, you know, asset class I'm going in and trading. But to invest in an ICO, I think there has to be an easier way than obviously flying around the country and going to see them the way you do. But that's why I read what you're putting out, Michael. But so something else that's news I want to talk about that you said was huge, pretty big, is this new Eris X. And talking about, you know, their Bitcoin futures. Talk to us about right. that. Why do you think this is so big?
Well, I just read the press release. But, I mean, my understanding was this is DRW, which is Don Wilson's firm. Virtu, the big high-frequency firm, and TD Ameritrade. So, I mean, you know, which is just gigantic. And from what I read that they are going to be listing, I believe, Bitcoin and Ethereum futures on their exchange and other cryptocurrencies. Again, like I was saying earlier about Bank of New York and State Street, and I just see big players in every direction coming into the space. I guess the way I look at it is this. I mean, because I saw somebody make this point before. You know, like the wealthiest person in the gold rush in San Francisco wasn't a gold miner. It was somebody that was selling the picks and shovels, you know, and there's kind of a metaphor, but it's true. I mean, and I can see the infrastructure is being built at the exchange level, at the clearing level, the custodian level, the security level, all these, you know, eventually the banking side, all these things are being built out because big players like TD Ameritrade, Microsoft, the ICE Exchange, NASDAQ, CME, they see a future here in cryptos and blockchain. And so they're setting up, they could care less that Bitcoin's down 70% this year. They're looking for the next 25 to 100 years. And so they're building out the infrastructure now. And that's why the story with Aris, to me, is significant. Because, I mean, from a trader perspective, that'll give people the opportunity to go short, which means they can spread, they can trade, you know, they can hedge things, which right now you really can't do. That's one of the reasons I decided not to trade this. I'm like, how am I going to trade it? I'm a spread trader. There's no facility to really do that. I can't run a business in this. But as you see Aris rolling out, you know, Bitcoin and Ethereum futures, other people will eventually do the same thing. That's going to give a lot more trading opportunity, which I think will add to much more liquidity, which, you know, I mean, maybe that'll be good for price, maybe not. But I mean, I think it's safe to say there'll be more liquidity in crypto markets once you have futures and ETFs approved and there's more access to those things.
So to me, what I see happening is there's just going to become, everybody's making a futures contract on this stuff now. It's like, where do you go and just trade this stuff? I mean, like me, obviously, I've been a CME person my whole life. You know, CME, I trust. I go on there. I trade a Bitcoin futures on there. I mean, what happens if we start having all of these different futures? To me, it spreads it. Don't you think it spreads it a little bit thinner? What are your thoughts on so many people having these Bitcoin? And like you said, now they're having Ethereum futures. I think even Bitcoin Cash and Litecoin are going to be on Aris X too, but I mean, everybody's going to have them.
Well, you know, I mean, listen, this is actually something that our mutual friend Terry Duffy says. I mean, Terry's the chairman of CME, of course. I mean, he says, look, we welcome competition. Yeah, we don't care. Like, you want to build an exchange? Great. I mean, the CME's view has always been the more the merrier. Everybody build an exchange because volume begets volume. That's a good thing. And that's kind of how I look at it. So, I mean, at the end of the day, you and I have to decide, do we want to do business on Coinbase? Do we want to do business on Binance? Do we want to do business on CME or NAS? And you know, people just make those choices, whatever. So I welcome it. I say, I mean, we know this. A lot of contracts will built and will fail. There will be some fraud, you know, and that's why the counterparties you choose are important. Like, I use Coinbase. I trust Coinbase. I think they're doing a great job on the regulatory front. And they're kind of like the CME of crypto in my mind. And so I'm comfortable having them as a counterparty. But everybody has to decide what their comfort level is. And you know, people choose that. So I don't know. I think it's great that there's going to be more products rolled out. I really do.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, the fact that these big players are doing it, I always say when people ask me, Anthony, why are you getting involved in the crypto space? I'm like, first of all, I'm trading it. I trade it, you know, anything that I feel comfortable with on a chart, more or less. So trading these has been not a major step for me. I like the way that they move. They respond to technicals. But, you know, when I look at who's investing in crypto and blockchain, I just, you can't look away from it because the biggest names in the futures industry are involved, period. It doesn't matter what I think. Money talks, man. And these people are putting their money into it. And it, like I said to everybody else, I'm like, don't look at what I'm doing and look at what these big players are doing. And it's not going away. They're not putting this investment in because they think it's here for a week.
I think this year, the public statements by the big exchanges, the tone has changed. And earlier in the year, there was some reluctance to talk about cryptos and to move, you know, real quickly into the space. I think that's changed. I mean, one example is NASDAQ. Their position seemed to be, we're not real interested in the space. And you know, that was sort of visible in their public comments late last year. And then, you know, in the first or second quarter this year, their CEO took a very public stance saying, we're embracing this. We want to move in this direction. So I just look at these are shifts in the market that I think are pretty dramatic. And, you know, I think the bigger, as you step back and look at it, it appears that the big futures and options exchanges are trying to find ways to get into the space. And I just think that's encouraging. That's all. I mean, it remains to be seen what they'll do and how they'll proceed. But, it, you know, the public statements, I think, from the exchanges have just become more more receptive to what's going on from what I can tell.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like I said, watch what the big players are doing. Look at what they're doing, not what they're saying. That's what's most important. Michael, you are very active on LinkedIn. Great stuff there. Where can people find you on there, and also give us a website to check out?
Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn. Please connect with me or send me a note. But I have a website called, it's 4Rev, the number 4, R-E-V. It's like short for Fourth Revolution, which is kind of where I think we're at in this whole giant experiment. But yeah, please check out www.4rev.com. It's a free site. We don't have any advertising. It's free to join. So we can be very objective and just speak our mind, which I kind of like that. And the whole site is just educational. But I'm very active on LinkedIn and enjoy writing there a great deal. So please, if you'd want to engage with me there, that'd be great.
All right, Michael, this was great. Thank you so much for joining me on Futures Radio Show today.
Thank you so much, Anthony. This is great.
Thank you for listening to Futures Radio Show. If you have any questions or comments for myself or my guests, please visit futuresradioshow.com and sign up to be a premium member for free. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes.